Well, there are a couple of typical introductions that preachers like to use, and you know I am a fairly unconventional person when it comes to that. But I'm going to go and break my own rule today. One of those typical introductions is to say, Webster's defines, then fill in the blank. I'm not going to do that one. But the other typical introduction is to throw a whole bunch of statistics at you and then make some kind of a thoughtful point about it. So I'll ask you this question. Are you having trouble sleeping? Are you having trouble staying awake during the day? And if that's the case, then you're not alone. The CDC continues to report year after year that sleep disorders and insufficient sleep habits plague our very driven, busy, and exhausted society. It is estimated that 50 to 70 million U.S. adults have some form of sleep deficiency or disorder. And before we dismiss that as just being some innocent product of our fast-paced lifestyle, consider some of the ramifications to that. The CDC has statistically linked sleep deprivation to higher rates of heart attack, heart disease, stroke, arthritis, depression, asthma, among other health problems. In 2013, so even a few years ago, it may be different now, but in 2013, it was reported that over 68% of high school students are sleep deprived. And according to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, I wonder if they get naps during the day there. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Adolescents who do not get enough sleep are more likely to be overweight, suffer from symptoms of depression, perform poorly in school, and engage in risky behaviors such as drug use and smoking. It is estimated that fatigue is the cause of 100,000 traffic accidents every year. Sleep also plays a critical role in thinking and learning, and a lack of sleep hurts these cognitive processes. During the deepest levels of sleep, our brains consolidate memories, filing them away into our long-term memory, so to speak. And a lack of sleep also impairs judgment. According to one study published in the journal Sleep, again, I wonder if they sleep much during the day there at the published journal Sleep, researchers tested, and this is an interesting one, 26 healthy adults, and they asked them to make judgments about the quote-unquote appropriateness of various courses of action in response to moral dilemmas. They tested these 26 otherwise healthy adults once under normal circumstances, asking them questions about, in this circumstance, what would be the moral response or what is the appropriateness of this response, morally speaking. They asked them all those questions one time under normal circumstances, and then they asked the same questions again after 53 hours of continuously being awake. Surprisingly, or perhaps not surprisingly, compared to their baseline judgments, sleep deprivation resulted in significantly longer response tendencies for moral, personal dilemmas. If you want to extrapolate some kind of idea from that, you could literally say that sleep deprivation causes a lack of moral fortitude. That given the same circumstance with sufficient sleep, you might make a decision very quickly, very confidently, that this is appropriate, that this is moral, that this is right. But with a lack of sleep, it may take you longer to come to that same conclusion, or you might not even come to the same conclusion at all. The findings suggest that a lack of sleep literally impairs our ability to make swift and consistent moral judgments. And speaking from personal experience as one who has counseled people through addictions such as pornography addiction, I can say in talking to almost everybody who has suffered from pornography addiction that at least I have talked to, everybody consistently across the board has said that the strongest temptations come after about 11 o'clock at night. So what's the point behind all of this? I'm reminded of what Paul's exhortation was in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 through 20, where he writes, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and that you're not your own, for you've been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body." When you borrow a pickup truck from somebody to do a job, It's just standard practice to take care of it and to return it to them with the tank full. You wouldn't return a pickup truck with the tank empty, filthy, with some junk in the back, and maybe even a dent on the hood that you don't have any explanation for. But you'd return it to the person in as good of condition as it was when you got it. And if it is true that our bodies do not belong to us, but our bodies belong to God, who then uses them in His service somehow, that our bodies are a temple, a dwelling place for the Holy Spirit, then when we do not take care of our bodies, in whatever way that is, today our particular area of conversation is sleep deprivation, but if we do not return that body to God in a way that is appropriate, I wonder, what are we going to say to Him? And what are the questions that He's going to ask us? If sleep deprivation is directly related to poor concentration and poor memory, if it is related to a number of diseases and other negative health conditions, and if it can be shown, and I think illustrated at least anecdotally, that sleep deprivation causes a loss of even moral strength and moral fortitude, then I wonder, is sleep just a subject that we can brush aside and ignore in the same way that we might brush aside and ignore that hour or two of extra sleep a night that we ought to be getting? Now, I speak as one who's even a hypocrite in this case, because until just very recently, I did struggle with sleep. You know, sleep to me, sleep always felt like a waste of time, like I've got other stuff to be doing, other things that I need to be doing. And I'd stay up as late as possible until I was doing this. And I would get up as early as possible because there's just too much stuff to get done in the day. And then I'd run and I'd work and I'd be busy. And always by about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm doing the same thing with my eyes, reading the same paragraph in a book over and over and over again. And I wondered, am I really taking care of my body? Am I recovering from my athletic activities? Am I giving myself the best shot at memorization and concentration while I'm working? Am I giving the best to my children? Or am I getting cranky every evening by about 6 or 7 o'clock when I just don't have enough emotional energy to deal with them anymore? Am I giving everybody, including God, my very best? And I suppose if the answer is no, then maybe sleep isn't just something that we can brush aside and ignore. Maybe sleep is something that is a whole lot more important. Paul exclaimed in chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians that he buffeted his body daily, that he made it his slave. I don't want to be a slave to my body. I want my body to be at my service. I want to be able to take my body and use it in whatever way God or my family or society needs me to use it to be the very best person, the very best husband and father, the very best member of society and civilian, and the very best Christian that I can be whenever the opportunity arises. And you know, the opportunity to serve doesn't always come at convenient times. The opportunity to serve doesn't always come when you're well rested. The opportunity to serve doesn't always come when you've had a good night of sleep. Sometimes the opportunity to serve comes when you least expect it. You remember the greatest thing that Jesus ever faced, the greatest burden that was on His mind, the most important event of His entire life came when He did not have a night of sleep to prepare Him for it. Now, He stayed up that entire night in preparedness because He knew that it was coming. And He was spending His time praying to God because that was what He needed. That's what His disciples needed to see Him doing. He was not just praying for Himself, but He was praying for His disciples that they would have fortitude when the time of temptation came. And He went to the cross having lost a night of sleep. So the opportunity to serve, even the obligation to serve, to do the most important thing that you can be doing, sometimes comes when we're exhausted and we've got to be ready for it. Have we done ourselves the best favor? Have we given ourselves the best shot then? Because the opportunity to serve isn't just going to come when we feel like it or when it's most convenient. Now, for all that can be said of the practical physical benefits of good sleep habits, I would like us to take a deeper look into the subject and see that sleep is an oft overlooked and rarely pondered spiritual blessing from God as well. Sleep is seen as a reward in the Bible. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 12, the sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much. But what does he say of the rich man? At least the rich man who does not put his priorities in the right order and doesn't think about God. He doesn't get a good night of sleep because he hasn't worked that day. And I love the way that's put, the sleep of the working man is pleasant. Whether you're rich or poor, whether you eat little or much, when you have given your best during a day of labor, physical labors and spiritual labors, sleep is a reward and it is pleasant. You know, we often use the phrase, hit the hay. And of course, that comes from a time before we had these comfortable beds of ours, whether your bed is purple bed or whether your bed is made of foam or whether your bed is full of water or air or whatever it is. There was a time when you would work the entire day to the point of exhaustion and you were just happy to have a pile of hay to fall on and enjoy. To hit the hay. We don't use that phrase a lot anymore because I just don't think we appreciate or understand what it would be like to hit the hay after a day of work. And I often wonder if one of the reasons that Americans suffer so much from sleep disorders is because we're becoming an increasingly sedentary people. And instead of working on our feet and moving and expending energy, we spend all day in chairs working. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's what your job is. But then we come home having driven from one place to another, sitting in a seat. And the first thing we do when we get home is sit in a chair or sit on a couch and watch TV or play video games. Of course, our children see that as well. And people decry the rise of obesity in our children, but sound sleep has become the collateral damage in all of that. In Ecclesiastes 5:12, in the second half, the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. And I think what Solomon is saying is that a life that's spent consuming rather than working and producing and laboring only leads to restless nights. Though surrounded by physical and material abundance, many of us labor through the night, tossing and turning, wishing that we could have the one thing that so mysteriously is denied to us, a good night of sleep. Go to Proverbs chapter 19, verse 23. And in Proverbs 19, 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life so that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. That's a really powerful concept, isn't it? That there is a link between sleeping satisfied and our spiritual lives. Now, I think a lot of people, whether they're Christians or not, a lot of people will suffer from that tossing and turning at night, where they're kind of flipping around, they're always thinking about this and thinking about that. And I wonder if one of the reasons why we toss and turn so much at night is because we do have these unresolved things that dog us at night. When we should be sleeping, we're thinking about the things that we didn't get done that day or the things that are waiting for us on the other side of the night. Now, it could just boil down to plain old physical discomfort because I love to camp, but one of the things I hate about camping is nighttime. I hate nighttime when you're out there camping. You look up at the stars or whatever, sleeping out in the open air, but that little thin foam pad and that rock, because no matter how hard you try, you can brush the ground all day, and there's still that rock that finds its way right here. Why is it always right there? It's always where the rock is where I'm sleeping. And if you don't camp, I guess you don't understand. You're like, no, that's why I don't camp. Well, good for you. But I love the link that's brought out here in Proverbs chapter 19 of there is a link between how we sleep and our standing with God. Now, I'm not saying that that's across the board always. There might, of course, be physiological reasons why people suffer from a lack of sleep or a sleep disorder of some kind. So I'm not saying it's always that. But, you know, it's like Mitch always points out, if you're having spiritual problems in life, start with the easy stuff first, right? Before you go down to the difficult things or the hard subjects, just ask yourself, what is my prayer life like? I mean, easy stuff like that. That's an easy question to ask yourself. Is if I'm suffering somehow spiritually, what is my prayer life like? And if I'm not sleeping well at night, ask yourself the same question. Maybe I'm not sleeping very well at night because I don't spend my days loving my children the way that I should be. And I go to bed with regrets because that's another day of their childhood. That is another day of their innocence. That is another day where they're living in my home where I had the most influence on them that I just wasted being cranky or grumpy or a workaholic or because I thought a TV show was more important than getting down on the floor and playing blocks with my toddler. And maybe that's why I'm not sleeping well at night, because my children are growing up right in front of my eyes, and every day I'm not maximizing the time that I have with them. Or maybe I'm not sleeping well at night because of the argument that I've had with my spouse. We're told in Ephesians chapter 4, don't go to bed angry. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Now, there's a spiritual reason there, obviously, because if God comes back in judgment, or if I don't even wake up the next day because I've died in the middle of the night, then I went to bed with a sin or a situation, a negative situation that was unresolved. But the other thing is practical. Don't let the sun go down on your anger, because then you'll spend all night seething and fuming and being frustrated. Well, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Maybe that's why you're not sleeping well at night. Maybe you're not sleeping well at night because you haven't been praying, and you haven't been studying, and you haven't been worshiping, and you have sins in your life that you have left unresolved, and you're not repenting of the things that you know that you need to repent of. Right? Start with the easy stuff, the obvious stuff first. If you're struggling somehow with your sleep, then maybe you're struggling somehow with your spiritual life as well. The fear of the Lord leads to life, so that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. This is why the psalmist puts so much emphasis on nightly prayer in his own life. Repeatedly in the Psalms, prayer at night is seen as a valuable, very valuable practice. Psalm 4, verses 4 and 8, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. In peace I will both lie down and sleep, for thou alone, O Lord, dost make me to dwell in safety. Psalm 63, beginning in verse 6, when I remember thee on my bed, I meditate on thee in the night watches. For thou hast been my help, and in the shadow of thy wings I sing for joy. My soul clings to thee, thy right hand upholds me. Now we're given a really good example of this in the Gospel of Mark. Let's read this story together in Mark chapter 4, beginning in verse 35. Mark chapter 4, verse 35 says, and on that day, when evening had come, he said to them, let us go over to the other side. That is, that Jesus was saying to his disciples, let's get in a boat and let's cross the Sea of Galilee to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And leaving the multitude, they took him along with them just as he was in the boat, and other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already beginning to fill up. And he himself was in the stern doing what? He was asleep on the cushion. Now, one of the reasons why Jesus never had a hard time sleeping, at least during his ministry, was because he always worked so hard. That man could not find a moment of peace and rest most of the time, so that when the opportunity did come to rest, Jesus always took it. You know, that's one thing that you notice when you read in the Gospels of Jesus' ministry, especially his Galilean ministry. He sought opportunities for peace and quiet and rest. That was very valuable to him, because he spends all day hounded by crowds of people wanting to be healed. He spends all day teaching and preaching, which is always exhausting. I preach for a half an hour and I'm ready to be done. And Jesus is surrounded by people, and he's walking from village to village. He's not taking a ride. He's walking from village to village, constantly working, laboring. So when he has a chance to sleep on a cushion in the back of a boat, he's going to take it. And what's amazing is, while the rest of his crew, his disciples, are panicking because the boat is filling up with water, Jesus is able to take a nap during a storm. That I find very amazing. The not only the exhaustion that shows, that Jesus was so exhausted that he could sleep through that, but also the faith that he has that he could sleep through that, knowing, I mean, if the boat tips over, I'm not going to die. Look at this here. He himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they awoke him. They had to wake him up. The tossing and the turning and the rocking and the waves and water splashing on his face, that wasn't enough to wake him up. His disciples had to rouse him awake. They woke him up and they said, teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? I mean, I might ask the same question. I might ask the exact same question. You're asleep in the back of the boat and we're about to tip over. Don't you even care that we, and I believe the we there is you included, Jesus, we all together are about to die. Don't you care? Now, being aroused, he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." Almost like you would talk to a toddler, right? Hush and be still. He brushes it aside the way you would talk to a toddler who needs to shush in the grocery store. That for Jesus, he didn't go into a panic like, "Whoa, I didn't realize it was so bad." For Jesus, it's more of an annoyance like, "Hush, be still. You're making everybody panic and they woke me up from my nap. Hush, be still." And the wind died down and became perfectly calm. And he said to them in verse 40, "Why are you so timid? How is it that you have no faith?" And they became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" He and his disciples are caught in this terrible storm, and Jesus is found asleep in the back of the boat. He's found asleep in the back of the boat. Now, how much faith do you need to have to sleep during a life-threatening storm? Or how confident in God's will must you be to rest so soundly? Now, that's a literal, physical, meteorological event that happened to them. But I suppose we could now expand it out to say the storms of our lives. You know, we've been asked by our elders to improve our prayer lives. And I think it's a wonderful goal. It was one that I would not have thought of on my own. I'm just so impressed with the way they've come up with such creative goals and such a creative and open-ended way to have that goal implemented. You know, they're not asking us to pray three times a day, or if you're praying three times, then pray four times. They're not asking us to pray at a specific time. They're just saying, whatever your prayer life is right now, take it to the next step. Take it up a notch. Do something more. Pray in a different way, in a new way, more often or more frequently, or on a different occasion, or pray about something that's frequently left out of your prayer life. Think about a way that you can improve your prayer life somehow. And I think it's such a marvelous thing because our prayers, I believe, are directly related to the strength of our faith. And our faith is directly related to the way that we can handle the storms of life. People with strong faith handle the storms of life. Partly, at least maybe even the major part of it, is because they have learned how to pray and they've left things up to God. To stop being anxious about everything, but leave it up to God. In our class on prayer just a few minutes ago during the Bible class session, we were talking about things that are out of our control. Politics and governments and world events that you don't have any say over. Natural disasters and diseases. I mean, these kinds of things sometimes feel so much out of our control, just like the disciples on this boat had no control over the weather. And yet when they pleaded to Jesus, what was he able to do? He did have control over the weather. And now we might fill in the blank there. Who is this, not just who has control over the wind and the sea and the waves, but who is this that has control providentially over governments and world events and rebellions and revolutions? Who is this that has control when natural disasters happen? Who is this that has control when I am facing a disease that will inevitably bring my life to an end and I have no control over that? But who is this that can take my soul into his hands and guide me to heaven nevertheless? Who is this that has that kind of a control, that kind of power? Now, like the disciples in the boat, maybe at first we doubt and we don't have that very strong faith, and we come to God very timidly. But we need to eventually grow to that point. And maybe it starts with a little more prayer. And a little bit more prayer makes our faith just a little bit stronger. And when our faith is a little bit stronger, we sleep a little better at night, knowing that no matter what happens, storm or earthquake or revolution or rebellion, or dying in my sleep of an aneurysm, when my faith is just a little bit stronger and my sleep is a little bit better, I can wake up every morning, if I wake up, knowing that my life is in God's hands. And suddenly the question of, but what if I die in my sleep, becomes immaterial to the Christian. Some people are so afraid of dying in their sleep that the fear indirectly disrupts almost every other part of their lives. And I think part of sleeping soundly is the confidence that salvation is God's promise to you, even if death comes suddenly or quietly. Let's bring our lesson to a close with a few practical considerations then on the point of sleep and the Christian's faith. First is this. We never really know what obstacles and opportunities may be presented to us throughout the day, so sleep in such a way that you're prepared for some extra effort when it's necessary. Sleep in such a way that you've got a little bit of extra gas in the tank if you need it. That if something comes up in the day that requires just a little extra energy from you, that you've got that reserve in the tank ready to go. Sleep like that. Don't sleep so that you're always just kind of budgeting sleep, on a zero budget there, right? Never negative, never positive. I've just budgeted the exact amount of sleep that I need to get through the day. Sleep that extra 30 minutes. Have that extra 30 minutes of energy in your tank so that when something comes up and you need to serve and you need to be pushed somehow, that you're able to. Jesus reminds us in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, verse 41, that when somebody pushes you and says, go a mile, you're able to look at them and say, I'll go two. I'll go 2 miles. And I'm ready to do that. And I'm ready to serve that extra mile. In Acts chapter 20, beginning in verse 7, Paul pushed his sermon back there until midnight when he met with the Christians in Troas. And unfortunately, a young man named Eutychus was unprepared for such an odd occasion to hear the gospel preached. And when it was very late at night and the lights were dim, you know how it is. You know how it is when the lights are dim and you're cozy and warm and someone's preaching too long, he falls asleep in the windowsill and falls to his death. Now, we see that as a humorous story only because Eutychus was brought back to life by Paul. I don't think we'd laugh so much at the story if Eutychus was not brought back to life, but it is a reminder for us that the opportunity to hear the gospel, to preach the gospel, to live the gospel, sometimes comes at an inconvenient hour. Second is this. Watch out for too much sleep, because too much is just as bad as too little. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 20 says, do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Apparently, British researchers were not the first to recognize a correlation between drunkenness and drowsiness. In Proverbs 20, verse 13, do not love sleep, lest you become poor. Open your eyes, and you will be satisfied with food. Now, this means that there is an extreme degree to which we can take our sleeping. Loving it too much may mean missing opportunities to work and serve and be productive in our lives. After all, sleeping is only good for so long until the body begins to atrophy. Without being satisfied with food, the unused, lazy body will waste away. And the last point is this. Don't be the sluggard. My favorite verse in the book of Proverbs, my favorite word in my favorite verse, in Proverbs 26, verse 14, as the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. You know how a door turns on its hinge? Swings open and then it swings back closed. The sluggard wakes up in the morning and sits on the edge of his bed and then swings back into his bed. Just like the door turns on its hinges. Don't be the sluggard. In fact, the sluggard loves sleep so much that that is the mantra of the sluggard. There's a bumper sticker on the back of the sluggard's Volkswagen Beetle that has grass growing through the engine compartment in his front yard. There's a bumper sticker on the back that a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And if you've ever driven past that person's yard and seen their Volkswagen Beetle with grass growing out of the engine compartment, that bumper sticker is on his car. That is the sluggard's mantra. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And the writer of Proverbs says, your poverty comes upon you like that. So sleep is a wonderful thing. I believe sleep is designed as a gift from God to give us the ability and the energy to do great things in this life. Sleep comes as a result of a strong prayer life and as a result of strong faith. Now, I know that there are other conditions, physiological and physical, that could be related to a sleep disorder. And I encourage you that if that is the case, talk to your doctor about that. Find a medical solution if that's what's necessary for you. Because if you're losing out on sleep, you're losing out on something that we need. A physical need, as much as we need water and food and air. My friends, you will not survive long, or at least very effectively, if you're not sleeping. Now, this seems like a kind of a strange lesson, talking about sleep for 30 minutes here. But I hope that you can see there's a great spiritual application to this as well. That all of these things, physical discipline is related to our spiritual discipline. Now, physical discipline only has enough good for a little while in its own particular way, but godliness, spiritual discipline, has an impact on us for all eternity. So if you have not been living for God, if you've not disciplined yourself in spiritual ways, then now is the time to do that, to become a Christian, to put God first in all things. And I think the physical things, like sleep, they'll come along if you've prioritized in the right way and if you're living for Him. So whatever spiritual need you might have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand in